This podcast is brought to you by Lanco Group, your business partner for engineering solutions. You are listening to FNR Football Nation Radio.
The Chinese Football Podcast, brought to you by Wild East Football.
Hello, and welcome to the Chinese Football Podcast, brought to you by Wild East Football. We're two games into the season with some interesting narratives unfolding, so of course it is time to take a three-week extended break for a fake international tournament, just so that everyone can sit down and relax. There's plenty of national and domestic football for us to talk about and keep you entertained during the break. I am, as always, your host, Steve Crooks, and I'm joined by the regular panel, Cameron Wilson in Shanghai. How are you holding up, Cam?
Hey, Steve, not bad. That's probably one of the best intros you've ever done. You took the words right out of my mouth.
Asking the questions that need to be asked. That's what we're here to do. And, of course, also by Brandon Chemers in Beijing. Great to have you back, Brandon.
Yeah, and back in Beijing, it's been a rough day, so I look forward to talking about some footy tonight.
Yeah, safe and sound from your trips in Korea and a blown scooter tire, which is the most Beijing excuse for a late recording that I've ever heard, pretty much. Either that or you're delayed on your way from Chuar. But let's get started by talking, I think, about the national team, because there's lots of stories floating around, probably going to have been confirmed, I think, by the time we do get the podcast out, around the latest, at least interim national manager. And it's an interesting one. It's another job share with Evergrande. It is, of course, Fabio Cannavaro. Cam, I'm going to come to you first on this one. Yay or nay for this as an appointment, do you think?
Nay. What's Cannavaro actually done as a manager except be the first guy in 8 years not to win the title with the biggest, richest, most powerful squad? And then he got promotion with Chuanjin, almost cocked it up in the last game of the season, like a few years back, again with like a mega buck squad. So what's he even done? He's got no experience in management even before this, and now it's like a cosy little continuation of the Evergrande CFA loving, which is a massive clash of interest. I think this is a very strange and frankly quite suspicious appointment.
Yeah, it doesn't look great from the outside. I mean, if you wanted to put pay to any of these rumours of kind of collusion between the CFA and one of the biggest clubs, this would not be the way to do it, would it, Brandon?
No, I mean, it certainly wouldn't. And I mean, I agree with Cammy. You know, what has Cannavaro done? He's not very, he hasn't really impressed. He hasn't really done anything. It's just sort of shocking that that he'd be the choice. I guess I sort of understand it in an interim position just because of all the Evergrande players that are surely going to be in the side and his knowledge of them. But other than that, I don't see. I hope it's not a permanent move because he doesn't seem the right choice. I mean, we were talking previously about a guy like Li Tie that knows the Chinese players, that has a lot of experience with Chinese football. We were talking about Goose Hiddink, who knows how to sort of develop young players, and now Cannavaro knows neither of those things. It's a disaster waiting to happen.
Yeah, a bizarre choice. I mean, he did well with that first season, I think, up with Chuanjin, but that is 1 year out of what's otherwise been quite a mediocre career. And Cam, they really can't afford to get this next appointment wrong because there's so much attention being paid to, you know, focusing on qualifying for the World Cup. I mean, if he is an interim manager, who do you think's going to get it in the long term? And Brandon's thrown a couple of names out there. Who would you like to see get it in the long term?
I can't think of any name, to be honest, because I don't think that the Chinese national team is got the ability to do very well. It doesn't matter who the manager is. It goes back to the conversation we had about the Asian Cup and Lippi, who's a manager with as good and impressive record and pedigree as any manager in world football, still couldn't take the fairly miserable lot and make them have a decent Asian Cup. I think it's very strange that they're having an interim manager. I mean just get over it and guess a point who you're going to appoint. You know Lippi was going to leave. Why is there this delay? Why do they have this habit of appointing interim guys? It just seems to be, I don't know, it's just kicking the can down the road. It's like you need to get a new guy in so he can get to know the squad, he can get to know, more importantly, all the idiosyncrasies of Chinese football and the strange things that happen, and just get to grips with that. And then put him in place so he can have time to get this team in a ship-shape position to qualify for the World Cup. I really don't understand why we have to have an interim manager when it's not exactly a shock. It was that Lippi's left. Indeed, we knew he was going to leave, so it seems to be just a waste of time to have an interim appointment.
Well, no one has said specifically that Cannavaro will be an interim manager. It's just sort of my guess, and I think our general guess, because I can't see why the CFA would put Cannavaro in as a full-time position. I do agree with you for sure, though. The Asian Cup ended for China in January. We're now in March, and you know they should have been able to work out who they want to be the next manager of the national team by now. It's sort of shocking that they haven't been able to.
Well, this is part of the problem, though, isn't it? It's like we don't know. We're having to kind of make guesses about what's actually going on, since there's not been any announcement about Cannavaro being a permanent appointment or interim. It's just not been said. It is so much. This is a situation where we simply don't have any information about what's going on. So there's this kind of climate of mystique and mystery and even confusion sometimes.
Yeah, plenty of confusion for us to cut through. I mean, to look at this a bit cynically, Brandon, do you think maybe it's a bit of a, obviously it'll be well remunerated, but is it a bit of a poison chalice? Are perhaps big name managers put off by the fact that they don't see how to make a success of this side? And at the same time, is Cannavaro a convenient scapegoat? Because again, so much is being focused on let's qualify for this World Cup. But, you know, I think looking at the squad, we've all said we don't necessarily rate their chances too highly, even if they brought in a really top draw coach. Or am I being a bit too cynical here?
Well, I mean, I'd somewhat disagree that they don't have a chance at qualifying for the World Cup. I think they have a decent enough chance of at least going far in the qualifying. I think what it comes down to is this is a side that where there's so much pressure and so much risk reward and not a lot that you're playing for most of the time, except for the World Cup friendly. So you don't tend to have a lot of time with the team to really put in your lineup. You know, there's rumors that, and the CFA has tamped down the rumors about Mourinho, their interest in him, saying that calling it fake news and everything. But I can't see, and I've been saying this probably for 10 years now, I can't see them getting a manager like that because China doesn't have that much to play for. And even if you give them all the money, even if you give him all the money in the world, unless it's someone old like Lippi, who is basically in semi-retirement mode, or like Hiddink, who's sort of down on his luck right now, sort of out of the picture going elsewhere, or a domestic manager, you're going to be very hard-pressed finding a top manager to bring in. That's why I think you end up with a guy like Cannavaro potentially taking over.
Yeah, Cam, is this where we restart the Manzano for China bandwagon? Can you think of any better candidates at this point?
I really can't, mate. I just think it doesn't matter who's the coach, like I say. I mean, I do think Lippi, you know, if you can't make a good team out of China, if Lippi can't do that, then I don't think there's much hope. Maybe the new players coming through might be a little bit different, but I really don't see it. I don't think the talent coming through is really any better. In fact, to be honest, I think it's worse. And I think Cannavaro is just absolutely not going to do anything different to what's come before. And the China Cup is coming up at the end of this month, which is it's just a glorified friendly. So sometimes China's results historically have actually been not so bad in these friendly games. I mean, not last time round they got a bit of a cuffing from Wales, if I remember. But still, like I say, there's no real obvious candidate. Maybe Gus Hiddink. I mean, you might expect him to be offered it since he's in the under-21 manager already. But apart from that, I'm not even saying I think that's a good idea. But other than that, there's no one who springs to mind.
Yeah, nice little segue into the China Cup. We can talk about that because this is obviously the reason that the league is being shut down, to give them time to get into camp and prepare for this kind of prestigious fake competition. They have set themselves up to try to avoid a humping in their first game this time. It's Thailand that they're going to be facing initially, before presumably Uruguay, I think, in the final. What are the kind of expectations again, Brandon? Do you think that they should coast through against Thailand. It wasn't easy going in the last tournament, obviously.
Yeah, I think it should be relatively easy. They did okay when they've met up with Thailand as of late. Being at home, I think, will also help. I don't see why it shouldn't be a win for them. It probably, maybe a little harder, or maybe a little easier than the Asian Cup. But the funny thing is, and I'm sure we're going to get into this, is that we still don't have any ideas as of what the squad will be. So no manager, no team announcement yet. So great times for China.
Yeah, looking into the crystal ball, as we always do. I mean, there have been rumors, Cam, that Wu Lei is not going to be part of that squad and that they're going to let him spend a bit more time in Europe. I mean, to me, it's almost a no-brainer. It's not the most prestigious competition, and unlike China, you know, the European season is continuing for the next week or two prior to the national break. Presumably, he's going to learn more and do better training and playing with Espanyol than he could in whatever military hijinks they've got lined up for the squad.
Well, of course, and this is another upshot of the Wu Lei's move, is that it forces the Chinese football system to engage with proper football countries who don't take weeks-long breaks for the national team. I think it's a positive thing. You've got Wu Lei, who is playing well with Espanyol. He's doing great, and he's been left there. And I think, you know, let's not give this credit to CFA. I think they would take him back if they could. But according to the rules of football, you can't release players. Clubs are not obliged to release players outside of international window.
They can take him back.
No, they can't. Clubs are not obliged.
It's an international break.
Yes, but the international...
They couldn't take him back this coming week.
Right,
for
they'll
the
take him back.
Break.
They could take him back in, 2 weeks.
Yeah, and yes,
they're not going to have a team this week. There's no team this week because they haven't announced one, and then there's the ACL matches.
Let me finish. Let me
finish. 17 of 23 guys playing midweek.
Let me finish. I was about to say the international break has not started yet. So that's why he's there, because the CFA can't take him back. And they think that somehow it's better to have all these players playing together, training for like 3 weeks, and all the other players in the CSL, which is over 400 Chinese players, have nothing to do for 3 weeks. And they think that somehow is better for the game.
Again, they're not playing training together for 3 weeks because
what
you look
doing,
at the
then?
China, the Asian Cup squad. The Asian Cup squad has 17 of the 23 players came from the four sides in the ACL. The ACL plays midweek. So the earliest these guys could come together as a team would be Friday.
Well,
so
that's still 2 weeks before the game. That's longer than any break in Europe.
But the international break begins, in theory, on Sunday. I mean, they could play a match over the weekend, in theory, but I can sort of see why there's no rush to do so.
As always, defending the CFA up there in Beijing, we're going to have plenty more, actually, to say about, I think, the governing body and interference from those above, even them. But firstly, while we're talking about the national team, this is a chance for us to bring a new contributor to the pod. Here's a short interview with one of the Wild East team, Zhao Xiao Oh, that I recorded earlier in the week. We have the man behind a lot of the Wild East football Twitter account postings that I'm sure you've all been wondering about. So I'm very happy to introduce and welcome to the pod, Zhao Xiao Oh.
Thank you for the introduction, Steve.
Yeah, great to have you on. Always looking for new voices on the pod. And you wanted to give a bit of a domestic perspective on a lot of matters kind of relating to the national team. Starting with, I think, your take on what the whole purpose of kind of Chinese football and the national team is ultimately.
Well, like many people, I wonder from time to time what the point of the whole thing is. But one day the idea came to me that Chinese football is a rite of passage for a lot of Chinese teenagers, especially boys, because I sort of was watching TV with my dad, watching Chinese football, I think it's 3 or 4 years ago, and sort of the whole difference between us, how we reacted to the Chinese national team play, I thought, yeah, that's probably the age is why the reason why there. So I thought, and Chinese football, like many things in life don't go the way you want it to. So,
setting you up for a life of kind of crushed hopes. It is the hopes that will get you, not the letdowns, as we all know and discuss on the pod. What's your take on these kind of national team training squads that we've got in the league? How much credence do you give to the kind of conspiracy theories that are swirling around both Evergrande and Tianhai this year?
Well, I think there's certainly a sort of invisible hand, or in all cases, the visible hand of the government here. But I think the difference is that Tianhai is apparently a sort of direct involvement of the government, in this case, the Tianjin FA, which is sort of provincial level government interference, which apparently, I think it's apparent to everybody who hear or see the development of things that the government just took over this team and want to sort of use as a testing field for some of its initiatives. Well, Evergrande, I think it's a different case. I think it's sort of more volunteering in nature, but I think Evergrande does these things. Basically, the Evergrande group and its chairman Xu Kang has this incentive to use football to advance his political status. So you can basically think that Tianhai is the official government team, whereas the Evergrande is this local businessman who wants to use football to advance his political career and protect his business interests.
Yeah, it's all about the Guanxi sometimes. Do you think, I mean, there's been lots of speculation around how good Tianhai's squad is or otherwise. Do you think it would be possible for them to go down? Do you think we'd see some strings pulled if they're struggling in the second half of the season?
Well, I don't think it would go down. I mean, it's very good on paper. I mean, you could grab all the players in. Need to actually stay up in CSL, and because there are a lot of weaker or even worse teams that probably I would think would have fewer points at the end of the season. But I think the key here is really the man we've all been talking about, Shen Xiang, for the head coach. I think he will be the weakest link, and if Tianhai does go down, everybody will correctly put the blame on him, but I really don't see them going down this season.
Yeah, interesting point on the coach. I mean, we've had a lot of bad mouthing of Shen Xiangfu, and I'm one of the people who will be most happy to do that. Why do you think he has this kind of Teflon reputation that despite all of his many failings as a coach, he keeps seeming to get better and better jobs and getting closer to the national team?
Well, I mean, people say he's a bad coach. I mean, I think his ideas about tactics and strategy, I mean, is still better than a lot of the local coaches. I mean, he was actually a very, very good one in the 90s and early noughties, but I think it's just that he didn't take on any new ideas for the past 20 odd years. Well, I think the thing about Shen Xiangfu is that his biggest asset is his political acumen, really. That he can smell where the wind is blowing, and he's a really nice guy. He's nice to players. I mean, there's no denial in that. But, I mean, it's just that his tactics are lagging far behind that, I don't think.
Yeah, it's a fair point that he did have some good results earlier in his career, but yeah, you certainly don't watch his teams for kind of entertainment and enjoyment these days. Do you think he's going to be one of the people with his hat in the ring to replace Lippi, or maybe to replace the next interim coach after Lippi? There's been a remarkable lack of progress in kind of appointing a long-term direction for the national team since the Italian stepped down.
Well, as far as I understand, the front runner currently is Caravano, and Lippi will come back as sort of technical director role, and I think it will be a sort of reasonable sort of conclusion, because people can use both people the fans and the football association can use him as scapegoat if things don't eventually work out. But I think there's a reason for the football association to be some other name, because it's just this sort of person there who's already heavily damaged in terms of public image, so they'll probably pick someone who's less controversial at the moment and someone who's who simply doesn't have as much political baggage on his back.
Yeah, a convenient scapegoat, though, as you say, and I think, as we've discussed a bit in this conversation, it does all tend to come back to the politics. Once there is a more of a direction in place, and we see perhaps how China get on in the very prestigious upcoming China Cup, it would be great to get you back on the show and get a bit more insight into the machinations and going on behind you. But thanks for joining us today, and you know, congrats on making your pod debut off the bench.
Oh, thanks for having me, and thank you.
Fantastic. Speak to you again soon. Cheers.
Yes.
Always good to get a fresh domestic perspective on matters and rumours surrounding the national team there. I want to talk a bit about some of these kind of debates we've had about government interference. There's some cracking political speeches mentioning that you know, the government needs to take an even more active role in monitoring the CFA, because it's been such a great success so far the way they've done that. But one of the questions that came in this week, and I'm going to take this at face value, because I think it actually leads into a really good discussion. This question on Twitter is from Kevin. As an Australian resident, so I will be answering this question myself, do you believe the Australian government and FFA should similarly copy the initiatives from the CFA and Chinese State General Administration for Sports? That is a wonderfully ironic question, Kevin. Thank you for that. I think that the government and FFA here are doing plenty of their own things to completely screw up the beautiful game, and they don't necessarily need any support from overseas. But what I do think is interesting from this is I listen to a lot of, you know, football media from Europe, primarily the UK as well. And from people outside, when they look and face value at some of these initiatives, you hear journalists make these comments like, oh, it's great what they're doing in China. They're trying to, you know, place a cap on big money transfers. They're trying to promote more domestic talent. They mandate minutes for young players. All of these things which at face value sound good, but I think when we look a little bit below the surface, we have a lot of kind of resentment and frustration around how they're implemented. Cam, I'm going to come to you first on this one. I mean, in general, how much heavier do you think the kind of the government interference and rule changes is going to get? And do you think it's entirely driven by the World Cup?
As we've talked about in pods before, every decision is basically analysed in terms of its direct benefit or eventual benefit to the national team. And with the World Cup being the qualification starting this year, I think it's going to reach a high tide of interference and heavy-handed rules. We've already seen this season. We've already seen naturalised player eligibility rules change the day before the season. Some of the rules are well-meaning, and some of the rules actually make sense. I think the salary cap, the transfer cap, I can understand that. I wouldn't necessarily oppose that. The under 23 rule has its pros and cons, but it's well-intentioned. But things like the punishments of certain players being wildly over the top, and more importantly, very inconsistent. The military training caps, one such example, is really, it's narrow-minded, and it's kind of, there's like a bit of an elitist attitude in the CFA where they seem to think that the only people that matter are the people at the top, which is the people, the players who are going for the national squad. They're the ones who, all the exceptions made, like we just talked about a minute ago, it's like, you know, they're taking weeks-long breaks to let them practice together or whatever they're doing, but they tend to neglect the lower parts of the pyramid, like the CSL, the CL1, the CL2, even amateur football. These guys need to be supported too, and in the grand scheme of things, they're not given due consideration, in my opinion.
Yeah, we've seen lots of those lower league clubs kind of with quite dire financial kind of issues, and even folding this year as well, which I think backs that up. I mean, Brandon, you are the one we come to for optimism on these matters. Which of the rules that we've seen in recent years do you think could be exported to other football leagues and could be applied elsewhere?
So I think that the way that the ACL teams are treated is something that we see across Asia, and to some extent even in the European leagues, certainly to a lesser extent, but it does exist. And so I think that's fairly common. I think the U23 rule is in general, it's a very good idea. It just needs to be better written. It's sort of the thing with China is that, you know, there's always these loopholes that exist, and you could drive a truck through these loopholes most of the time. And that tends to be the biggest issue, because these things on paper, it looks like a great idea. But when you have a lot of these guys who will play 5 minutes or 10 minutes out, they'll get into 25 games and play 10 minutes. It shows you that it really didn't work out the way it is. And you have teams that, instead of really building their academies, are just buying players from elsewhere. It's not what the rule should be about.
Yeah, the intentions of the rules and their actual application and implementation not always on the same page, obviously. We've spoken lots about that in the past. I'm sure we'll come back to it a lot again. I think that's enough about the national team and the governing body for now. We will go back to matters club football, but firstly, it's time for our regular Phenomenon of the Week section.
The Wild East Football Phenomenon of the Week.
So we've not entirely escaped the CFA. They and their fussing around with the rules about naturalised players was a landslide winner in the listener poll last week. I believe that was Cam's suggestion, so he gets to go last this time. Brandon, who or what has caught your eye this week and why? I've got to say, I think your nomination for Li Tie and his kind of unflappable haircut did not get the votes it deserved last week.
So I guess I'll have to go... I'll go with Fu Ming and his refereeing for the Shandong Henan game. Some very controversial decisions and leading to a lot of public and media questioning about the referees and the CSL and if something more needs to be done about them.
You would never, of course, hear this pod complaining about referees. For me, it's a simple one. It's got to be old pod favourite making a successful return to the pitch with the lesser spotted Jiang Kun getting a run out in some of the lower leagues, and I believe even laying on an assist or something this week. So I'm sure he's been keeping himself in tip-top shape with the Baijiu and the the Zhongnan Hares over the years. So probably not lost any pace. Cam, how are you going to follow that one up?
I'm going to follow up with something which was equally hilarious, and that is Li Shuai, the Xinhua goalkeeper's, how to describe this, meandering stroll back to his goal mouth after coming up to try and score from a corner. I just watched it again just as we were doing this, and someone has juxtapositioned Joe Hart's famous sprint back in 2012 for Man City against Everton to clear Wayne Rooney's long distance shot, and Joe Hart, he ran up the line into the pitch trying to score, and there's an actual point in the two videos side by side where neither goalkeeper is in the frame, because Li Shuai is yet to run into the frame in the Xinhua half, and in this Man City video, Joe Hart has already sprinted off the edge of the screen, and that is just absolutely...
And it's a wide-angle
absolutely
lens.
Absolutely phenomenal. So, yeah, Li Shuai.
Yeah, just when you thought that only the foreign imported strikers were able to amble meaninglessly around the centre circle, Li Shuai shows goalkeepers can do it as well. There's a fun mixed bunch there. Look forward to seeing the listener input and voting. As always, do give our poll a vote on Twitter. So that leads us to speak about the games over the weekend. Obviously, we're only two rounds in. I don't think we need to do any detailed analysis of the table yet, but I do want to start by asking, actually, Brandon, a little bit controversially maybe, we are only two games in, but are the top and the bottom of the table pretty much set in terms of the teams that we're going to see up there and down there?
Well, I think the top pretty much is. I mean, the top three, Shenzhen is definitely a surprise with two wins from two games, although playing Shen Shangfu always helps that. The bottom of the table is pretty much what we expected it to be. No real surprises there. And so I think that, yeah, I mean, for the most part, the picture at the top is going to stay relatively the same. There'll be some movement between the top three. Maybe Shandong, maybe Jiangsu kind of gets up there for a while. So that's pretty much set. But the bottom, yeah, it could be fun down there. There's plenty of bad to move around.
Yeah, and surprisingly, we've not had too many questions on Shenhua, so we don't need to dwell on them this week, Cam. But obviously, the bottom of the table is not something that makes pleasant reading in the majority of Shanghai at the moment. Do you think that Shenhua are the team who are most looking forward to this extended break? Because, my God, they need to get their house in order.
Yeah, I was listening to a Chinese football blogger, what's his name again, Xu Hong. He has a little podcast. I was listening to it earlier today, and he said, good news for Shenhua fans. The news is there's no game this weekend. So that was pretty funny. And you got to laugh. I was at the game last night. It was just diabolical. Not to go over what we talked about last week, but all I would really say is that there were four players on the pitch who were signed from China League One clubs. And, you know, whilst I think there can be players in the lower divisions who are in the mid-20s or older who do have the ability to step up to the CSL, I think expecting four players to do so is really a bit much. And I think that basically sums up the problem with Shenhua.
Yeah, I'm sure there's going to be a few more of these kind of post-mortems over the year, so no need to dwell on that one. Brandon, there's another question that came in that I think is interesting to look at. This is from a boy named Sue again, a review of the new big imports, listing off a lot of the names, Kim, Fellaini, Dembele, Hamsik, and some of the others. What's interesting for me is that obviously we've spoken about how Kim has made an immediate impact in the back line at Guan, but if you look at the players who are making a difference very, very early, admittedly, in the season, it kind of adds fuel to the fire that players need to spend a season or two out here before they really start making a contribution. And there's been no immediate impact from lots of those big name forwards yet. So is this another case for saying be patient with your big money signings, fans of Chinese football?
Yeah, I think for sure that it definitely takes some time. Some of these signings came in fairly late in the process, and especially for, Fellaini's been okay, but I think when you look at a guy like Sandro Wagner coming into a team as bad as Teda, it's a major adjustment. And even Kim Min-jae, while he played great against Wuhan, there was a lot of unhappiness with the way he played against his old side midweek. So I think in general, it's going to take some time for these guys to really come through and show how good they can be.
Yeah, and again, perhaps a bit more time training with their clubs might help with that one. One other question that came in, Cam, this from Ryan Walters of K-League United, our counterparts over there. Will the extended time off help or hinder Chinese ACL clubs? Is there a potential for them to lose an edge before the competition comes back in early April? They've obviously got the second round of games coming up midweek, but they're not going to play a lot more club football compared to their counterparts in Korea and Japan. And do you think this is another example of the CFA kind of gently disparaging their campaigns this year?
Yeah, I think it is. I don't see how teams not playing for weeks on end helps them, especially when you consider the bigger picture that games are really shoehorned in the last couple of months of the season to make up for these elongated breaks. I think the disadvantage it has for the CSL is obviously going to apply to the ACL as well.
But how many less matches are they really playing? Isn't it just one?
Like these, the thing that's different this season is it's kind of been standard in recent years for there to be like long breaks, like 3-week breaks for international games, but they're having like a month break in October and September. I think it's a 3-week break and then a 4.5-week break. So obviously they need to find time somewhere to play all the CSL games, and that's what's causing the shoehorn factor of cramming in lots of games within a relatively short period of time towards the end of the season.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know, considering what we thought about the Chinese sides, I don't know how many are still going to be in the ACL in October.
Right, that's true. I mean,
yeah,
we don't know how it's going to go by that point, but even at this point of the season, I mean, I just think it's it's the start of the season and teams are trying to find a rhythm, and they're not going to get that because there's a good few weeks without a game for the vast majority of players in the CSL.
Yeah, I think it burns them at both ends of the season, right? That they're not going to be match sharp compared to a lot of the other teams at the start of the season, and then if they are still in it at the end, the fixture congestion is going to be horrific. One more question that I'm pulling out of our historical mailbag here. So if you have sent in a question on Twitter and it's not been answered, never fear, we might get around to it one day. This one asking, Brandon, I'm going to come to you, I think, with this one. Do CSL fans really use the blousy team nicknames that are listed on Wikipedia? For example, the Imperial Guards, the South China Tigers, etc. Or are their nicknames pithier in Chinese?
The CSL fans don't really use any of those names. It's just sort of, it's something that media might use from time to time. The Royal Army, Royal Guard, whatever you want to call for the Yulinjun is sort of, outside of being a Guan fan group, it is something that you hear media referring to the team as, but I've never heard a fan call the team the Yulinjun, and I think it's fairly similar in other places as well. I don't know, Cammy, what do you think?
I've actually liked the question, and I've also looked at these nicknames and wondered where on earth they come from. If they do exist, I've not seen them in Chinese media, and I've certainly not heard them mentioned by Chinese fans. Maybe one or two nicknames might have some basis in reality, I'm just guessing, but I've certainly not heard of it. It's more the nicknames are given to the cities, I think. Or like for Shanghai, they might say like Shincheng and stuff like this, like Shin City, or some other nicknames. But that's obviously not a team's name, and I'm not sure if there's a connection between those or not.
Yeah, I think always pithier in Chinese. And another example of us being here to kind of bust some of those myths that exist on the English language internet around Chinese football. Well, it's been quite a mixed bag of a podcast, actually. We've talked a bit about the national team and their potential new manager, to be confirmed. Looked at where we are in the league. There's going to be plenty for us to, I think, spend a bit of time diverging about as we go through this first of many extended national team breaks through the season as well. So please do throw in any questions that you have, listeners. We'd love to spend a bit of time digressing and going into those. And before we wrap up, I would just like to give a quick reminder. Many of you will have seen this call out on Twitter, but if you enjoy the podcast and would like to chip in a bit of financial support, then you are able to do so now via Patreon. That does help us keep the pod going and potentially move on to bigger and better things. And either way, whether you wish to donate or not, please do continue to listen and also share the pod. Any reviews or ratings or shares that you can give us on your podcast listening platform of choice really are massively appreciated. And with that kind of call to action, we're going to sign things off here. Cam, thanks as always for giving us the perspective from Shen City and many other words I could call it.
Cheers, Steve. I just want to give Matt Parker a shout out for the very funny joke he made on Twitter about painters. I liked that one very much.
Yeah, we might need some new colour schemes at Hongko. I chuckled about that one as well. Yeah. It seemed to have worked for Foolie. So if we ever do an interior decorations episode, I'll be all over that. Brandon, thanks for joining us again, coming back from your latest kind of international man of mystery stint.
Yeah, thanks. It's time for me to see a man about attire.
And he actually means that, folks. That's not a euphemism or a joke of any kind. So we will leave you on that cliffhanger. We will be back to talk about many fun topics, I'm sure, next week. But for this week, this has been your Chinese football podcast brought to you by Wild East Football. And I've been your host, Steve Crooks. Thank you for listening.
The Chinese football podcast brought to you by Wild East Football.
全场比赛结束了，我们终于出现了。